You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
We ever have Grohl on?
No.
He's
been like top of Dan's
no,
list.
No, I've been wanting to have him.
He's hard to, even, I know he's promoting right now, but he's hard to get.
He's going to be at one of these music festivals
he's, that was I mean, the put Foo
in
Fighters,
front of us. Yeah, no, Foo but that was put in front of us to go to.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was Innings Fest one of those? Because yes. That's right up the show's alley.
Innings Fest is great.
Innings Fest is the one. Yes, Innings Fest is the one. Dave Grohl and who else?
You know, Jake Peavy's hosting a jam session.
It's with Peter Gammons. It's partly his event, isn't it?
Should we ask the audience for places that they would want us to pop up? Because that we're going to start doing some of that.
And we should ask Metalark for places that we're allowed to pop up.
That's a good one, though, to just go talk to a bunch of 90s baseball players for no good reason.
The festival poster for Innings Festival, and Sarah Spain's gone to this. It ties in with spring training starting in Arizona. And it's headlined by like Tame Impala and Foo Fighters this year. St. Vincent is there. It's a pretty good lineup. But also on the lineup poster, it's players from our 90s baseball game. Tim Raines is there. I think Sean Casey is there. Like I said, there's a jam session hosted by Jake Peavy. It's a dream.
Dempster's there. Roger Clemens, the Rocket, is there. Rick Sutcliffe, Sutty. Eric Gagne. Oh, we got to go. Johnny Gums. Johnny Gomes.
Oh, Keith Polk.
We can get all the good stories, though, right? We'll get
Tim Salmon there.
Well, these guys won't be protecting the stories from the past. Can we get a whole bunch of good 90s baseball stories?
I can't think of my world's meeting more than watching My Morning Jacket with Russ Ortiz.
I mean, I got to tell you, we went to Tahoe, and Sean Casey embraces these things in a way, like these weekends.
Mayor.
He was mesmerized by a guy, a magician, who was doing balloon tricks. I mean, it was crazy.
Not great radio or audio.
Well, Casey's going to be there. I mean.
Balloon tricks, though, probably not what we need from him.
How about Tim Raines? When's the last time you seen him rock?
Steve Martin, prop comic.
Someone said that.
Also.
Smash Mouth. You guys saw everybody was sending us the news yesterday. Look, I got Whittingham's attention on this. Their lead singer, Steve Harwell, that we have been obsessed with here for about a week to 10 days, because if you do not know, Smash Mouth had one hit about this time in the 90s, maybe the early 2000s, All-Star, and they're still out here playing, and their lead singer was not around recently, and they headed into the pandemic very early to play music, to keep rocking on. And they had a lead singer in a costume pretending to be the other lead singer. And now Steve Harwell has called TMZ or talked to TMZ and announced that he is retiring. And his last thing was to slur through a bad audio sit and then make the Hitler, Hitler sign. So
allegedly, it's debatable.
Is it?
In his defense. A lot of the other stuff was not called into question.
Is there not a gray area in the Heil Hitler sign?
It's a good point, Winnie. Like, I mean, Winnie's right.
It could just be him pointing.
No, I mean, it could be.
There could be, yes.
No, there's not a lot of gray area, but yes, it could just be that he didn't know what he was doing, and he was just jerking his hand motion and his arm motion in a way that conjures, you know, world war and genocide of a people.
But it could also be that.
It could just be a Smash Mouth rock and roll lead singer not knowing anything and just making a sign where stiffly waving toward others. But there's not a lot of gray area.
It looked like it.
To Whittingham's point.
It looked like it, right? I mean, it looked a lot like that's what he was trying to do.
And then he immediately retired.
But then there's
retired.
That like Laura Ingraham gray area, which is like, wait, I thought I saw what I saw. But then she pivots her hand and makes it a normal wave afterwards. That's the gray area. Because you could say, what do you mean?
That's the gray area. So you've been called out, Whittingham, on your...
Do you know what I'm talking about, the Laura Ingraham?
No.
All right, look it up.
All right, I'm on
Laura Ingraham, RNC.
All right, I'm watching the video right now. I understand your point in defending him just from a legal perspective, just to cover our bases, because he's denying it. But this is not good. It's not good.
Okay, where do you stand on the Laura Ingraham RNC salute?
Have not seen that. Okay. I will do my research.
All right. If there's a gray area, it might be this one.
Some Laura Ingrahams are making their way. Have you seen what's happening with the Gruden discussion, Stugatz? Because it morphs on the second day. Some people, you know how this stuff always happens around here. Whenever we got one of these big scandals, and you saw it happen yesterday, people don't want you to talk race. Don't talk race. Don't talk race. Gotcha. Gotcha. And then we talk race all over your televisions for 24 hours. You've heard all the opinions. There's very little new at the trough. And then when people go in the next day, you start complaining that they're still talking about it. But the evolution of this story is the Tampa Bay Bucks Ring of Honor. John Gruden has been taken down.
That was quick.
And a lot of people are pointing out, why is Warren Sapp still up there? In other words, what about Chicago? Like, it's all of a sudden people care deeply about the Tampa Bay Bucks Ring of Honor. Out of nowhere, they care about
it. Never thought about it before.
Just because Gruden's name is being taken down.
And it's ethically and morally consistent, the Tampa Bay Bucks Ring of Honor.
It's a very important thing. People care greatly now that the Ring of Honor be morally consistent and we should all be equal and have allowed John Gruden the right to still be honored because his racism and his hate don't have anything to do with why we're honoring him. God damn it.
Across all NFL 32. Because take down O.J. Simpson's name from the Ring of Honor in Buffalo.
Is he still up there?
I saw that one about yesterday.
He has to still be up there, yeah.
Why? What did he do?
What did he do?
Is he still memorabilia? Up there? Is that innocent till proven guilty? Wait a minute. You're kidding me. You're telling me that what you guys are saying cannot be true. O.J. Simpson's name cannot be in the Ring of Honor because I'm actually okay with that whataboutism. If you tell me why are you taking John Gruden's down?
He's so proudly displayed in the Wall of Fame. I saw this from JoeBucksFan.com while they were comparison shopping the John Gruden controversy.
Mike, that can't be. You're kidding me. I thought we'd all agree that if they took O.J. Simpson's name out of the Ring of Honor, we'd all sort of be like, yeah, you know what? If they just put up he did it instead.
Yeah, I'm on the Bills official website. Their Wall of Fame still list O.J. Simpson.
You want them to retire a jersey that says guilty?
Yeah, O.J. Simpson, still
founding member of the Wall of Fame. So he is the first name in the Buffalo Bills Hall of Fame. They inducted him in 1980. They don't induct somebody else until 1984.
The thing that happens, though, now, okay, around these kinds of stories, Stugatz, because I was actually trying to figure out, there haven't been that many of these, but there have been a couple where I'm like, well, how are they going to other sides this one? And John Gruden, I didn't see a whole lot of angles to do it from, Stugatz, because it's like, let's give the other side, it's not that bad. Okay, but it's still bad. Even if you don't think it's that bad, it's still bad. We're in agreement there.
It's bad.
But is there another side? And so one of the things that's happened is Whitlock's going back and forth here with Randy Moss, where Randy Moss is threatening on site to beat the shit out of Jason Whitlock, because Jason Whitlock is saying he doesn't care so much about the opinion of the white man that he would cry on television over it. I am remiss in not asking Bomani about this yesterday because I heard him be so good on it on CNN, but why Randy Moss was crying. And Randy Moss getting to where he got through what he got through to get there, for him to cry on television because of how the betrayal felt to him. A lot of people were beating up on Jason Whitlock because they're like, what are you doing making fun of this dude who's hurt on television? And Whitlock's like, don't cry on television. And that it's performance and that he would never do that. Right. Is Whitlock's side of it. And the way that we keep going back and forth on all of these, wherever it is that they appear, this is an unusual one, Stugatz. Like, what is there to defend Gruden about? What are you defending if you're defending Gruden? Because it's not even grab him by the pussy, boys will be boys, locker room talk. Like, what are you defending if you're defending John Gruden? And why are you just aligning over there? Because the culture war is such right now that we just line up white, black, wherever it is, or just against each other, wherever it is.
There is no defense, but perhaps it's the cancel culture in general. If there is a defense, like just going back into people's past and picking through their emails and then, you know, I mean, gotcha.
This isn't cancel culture, though, really.
I agree, Mike. No, this is
okay, but no.
These are emails from 2010 to 2018.
We get accused of being an echo chamber around here and not having dissenting opinion, but there have been a couple of these stories recently where I'm like, well, how is the other side going to be taken on this one? Like, because there's not another side. Like, right. You can't be in a position of leadership and just hating everybody way.
I've seen the other side. The Republican talking points on this, the conservative talking points on this are, well, what if you mic the players? Well, what about that halftime show? It's all out there. It's a very clear difference. John Gruden is hired as a leader of men. He has a locker room that he has to rally, and there are people that he is in that locker room that he has insulted with his hateful speech.
Losing your job is a very normal consequence of bad behavior. It's not like he's getting, you know, burned at the stake and where everyone's taking all his money away from him. He still has millions of dollars, a nice house, a family. Like, he can go live his life. But he just can't be the coach of the Raiders
anymore. He's covered in shame. And this, I still am super curious, and we will talk to Sally Jenkins about this shortly, about how the information got to us and what Bomani was saying yesterday was a slow leak, that they were trying to get Gruden out without this coming out. So the first thing, and he was going to survive the Damora Smith thing. He was going to survive that. Right. But there were things last week that were being slow leaked, and then the avalanche just hit, and he immediately resigned. And the way he resigned, can we address this one for a second? Because we skipped past it yesterday. Woo, that paragraph was weak. Like, that's just like, hey, I'm sorry, I really never meant to offend any or hurt anybody. And it's like, what do you mean? Like, you were somebody.
You wanted more there.
You were someone who was intolerant.
You expect too much, though, Dan.
Well, but I expect too much. A guy just resigned a very public job that has paid him a lot of money and has made him a lot of money with the bodies of the people in that sport.
You wanted more there. I understand it, but consider the person we're talking about and what we now know about that person. You think he's going to give you more?
Oh, I'm just saying he's running out the side door as quickly as possible. And even the statement didn't have much care in it. It was just...
Perhaps because he doesn't care, you know?
You don't think he cares?
Well, I think he cares about the reaction to what it is he wrote. But when you're that comfortable for 8 years writing what you wrote and hitting send to a league, to a team president, I'm not certain if he cares. Honestly, I don't know. I don't know him well enough. None of us do.
There is another story that has made its way in from this in the journalism world. And I don't know how much you care about this either, because I've seen precious little caring about journalism as it's fallen apart in the last 20 years. But because we've got some gotcha in here on Adam Schefter, and I always wonder how it is that these insiders can do that job that well, where they're beating the local beat reporters on all their stories because they're so plugged in all over the league. And part of those emails show Adam Schefter sending to Bruce Allen, calling him Mr. Editor, and sending some copy his way to sort of proofread it and see if there was anything objectionable in there on something that he wrote. What are your thoughts there, Stugatz?
Man, I like Adam a lot, but that doesn't seem to me the way that Adam Schefter should be doing his job. Like, no, do not give the guy the benefit of the doubt to proofread something that you're about to report. Your job is to be a reporter, and the person that you're doing the reporting about should not have the ability to proofread it.
I think a lot of journalists have probably gone to a source to show them what they wrote, portions of what they wrote, if they want to make sure that a quote is accurate or, you know, the phrasing of a line is accurate.
I've done that.
Right. I think that is standard practice. Sending what this email says is that he sent an entire unpublished draft to Bruce Allen and called him Mr. Editor and said to tweak whatever he wanted to tweak. That is not journalistic practice. That is not good. That is not good journalism.
But it is insider journalism. This is how the sausage gets made when you get a Woj bomb, when you have Schefter set to mobile alerts. It's a give and take. You use me for your story, and when you wave your backup quarterback, I'm the first with it. It's all about relationships. All about relationships. And this is how you get your Shams tweet alerting you about a signing before even the signing knows.
Mike, you're right, but Adam Schefter and Woj and Shams, they're all about credibility, and this makes you question their credibility a little bit.
There was nothing surprising about that.
Really?
The only shocking part about it was him calling him Mr. Editor, and that's a chummy friend thing by someone who has very good relationships, because that's why they're very good at their job.
I agree with everything Mike said. It's not surprising, but I would say insider journalism should have like the biggest air quotes around it, because insider journalism is not the same as you reading a investigative story by a reporter who is trying to actually get accurate information and disseminate it and isn't going to show the president of a team or an organization that they cover the information and say, hey, let me know what I should change.
But it feels like something you would do to establish, like you're young, you're trying to break into the business and you're trying to form relationships. You're still doing it after all these years, after all the credibility you've amassed?
We've built these monsters. Be first.
I know.
It's most important. I know the difference between Seth Wickersham's investigative journalism and Adam Schefter's insider journalism. I know it's all for show. I know it's all flash paper. He's also done some very credible journalism work. But that's the give and take of the insider. Dan, do you agree?
I think it's fascinating, but I also think that the audience doesn't want to care about all of journalism's layers that way. And I think I bore the audience sometime, because when I'm watching that, I've always been curious. How does Woj do that? Because, look, man, CAA has run sports for a while. These agents are all getting their fingerprints everywhere. It's a very hard thing when you've got local community papers, multiple ones covering their team, and they get beat on all the stories by these guys.
Right.
Rare do any of these stories break in the markets. These guys, the Jay Glazers, I've always been fascinated by it, because Jay Glazer has these relationships with the players. And I'm like, how do they know this much, where they're beating an army of reporters all over the country on every story? Those reporters can't do that. That's not allowed in the world of those reporters. But ESPN can traffic in this place because they're partners with the teams. They're trying to do journalism, but it doesn't have to be journalism the way newspapers do journalism, because that's a journalism that's the standard of, no, you don't do that. What Schefter did,
right.
No, you do not allow Bruce Allen to control. That's propaganda. Like, what do you, that's...
Don't you wonder what's not being reported?
But that's all the time. But the transaction that's been made, Stugatz, is Stephen A. Smith goes through all the worlds And when he's out here saying that Kyrie Irving will be traded for a bag of cookies, people are objecting, like, you don't have any sources on that. That's not, that can't be a real thing. And he's saying that he knows. And Stephen A. comes in and out of both of the worlds. But he's an entertainer now. He's somebody, as those ratings go down, you'll hear more of, and I think the Chiefs are done. If those ratings start going down, his job is to get them back up. It ain't journalism that's going to get him back up. It's Stephen A. being an entertainer.
I don't know if the audience cares about it or not. Like, that's fine if you do, fine if you don't. But I think it still warrants some criticism when you find out that this is something that's happening. And, like, I think you could also look at the Shams article yesterday about Kyrie Irving as an example of using these sources to tell a story and then, you know, leaving them anonymous, basically, and then putting out whatever spin Kyrie Irving or his camp want you to put out and getting it published in a credible, on a credible website.
But this is the trade, is what I'm saying. Like, these, some of these things are ethical breaches according to old journalism, but this is a new transaction, new journalism, different journalism by ESPN with its partners, Fox with its partners. Like, we are all in bed together there, and that's how the machine ends up working. That story, I was surprised that that story, it was coming out in dribs and drabs with Chris Mortensen, but I was surprised that that story appeared in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. And I'm guessing it's because it had so much breath that someone couldn't break it. They needed newspapers. They needed newspapers to lend the credibility of, this isn't a report, here are all the words, because that leak was meant to cause what it caused. And those entities, whether you like them or not, are trying to do journalism fairly. I know both of them have their own politics and their own leanings. What Adam Schefter does for a living is inside journalism, around journalism, but in a business partnership with Bob Kraft on an app, right, with his corporation, in a business partnership with the NFL. Those conflicts can't exist in a newspaper. They're not allowed to exist, but that's not how we treat the coverage of this. This is Adam Schefter is your information guy, and part of getting information is having really good relationships with really good sources.
I think watering down journalism and, like, what it is and what it should be is just a massive problem we have in society, not with just sports, but with the way that reporters of politics get their information and then share it. And it has huge consequences. So I think that whether or not it's something that we're okay with as sports fans, because we know that ESPN and the NFL have a partnership, and so there is going to be a degree of propaganda there, it's still, you know, when you see someone like Adam Schefter or any insider, quote unquote, sending an article to a source and calling them Mr. Editor, like, it's bad. It's a bad look, and it deserves some criticism.
It seems like the way I would do it, and if that's the way I would do it, it's bad.
I think that's a good, hard and fast journalism rule. Put it on the poll, Whittingham, please. Is it a good journalism rule? If you do it the way Stu Gatz would do it, that's a bad way to do it.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Have you ever wondered if Chet Holmgren might be a descendant of Abraham Lincoln, or if a UFC fighter could beat an alien in a fight? You might have not, and that's okay. I probably have thought about the UFC one, to be honest. But Shea Serrano and Jason Concepcion from the Six Trophies podcast have. If you love basketball, and more importantly, if you love fun, you gotta listen to Six Trophies, where Jason and Shea serve up the biggest moments from all around the NBA with their brand of unbridled joy, banter, and pop culture side quests. Each week, They hand out 6 pop culture themed trophies for 6 basketball related activities. Stuff like the Denzel Washington and Training Day trophy, given out to the player or team having the best week around the NBA. Or the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy for the team or player that just can't get it together. Plus a bunch more trophies for all the good, bad, or just plain head-scratching moments from all around the NBA. This playoff season, you want to make 6 Trophies your go-to companion podcast. Follow 6 Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
We'll get some journalism expertise here from someone who's a little more credible and qualified about the principles of these things than Stugat. Sally Jenkins of the Washington Post.
Isn't that everyone? I mean,
her city, her football franchise is at the center of this mushroom cloud because it was the investigation into the Washington football team toxic work environment that ensnared John Gruden. So, Sally, thank you for making the time for us. We'll get to the Schefter stuff with you in a second. But Gruden ends up, those emails end up flashing in your life, and Sally Jenkins thinks what?
I think it was inevitable. I mean, these guys have been casually sort of tossing these terms around for so long in the game, it was inevitable that at some point somebody was going to go kaboom. You know, it wasn't shocking, to be honest. The main thing that strikes you is that John Gruden and Bruce Allen are, I mean, they literally grew up in football. They've been around, everyone's known them since they were practically boys, right? So they're very, very, very known quantities inside the game. And everyone's just been sort of winking and playing along with, you know, the way they do business and the way they talk about people.
What's going to come out on the Washington football team, Sally? How is it? Can you explain to us how it is that the Washington football team has an investigation ongoing and we don't know what's going on there and there is no paper trail, but over here, John Gruden gets taken out by what's happening over here more quietly?
Look, I think there are so many machinations behind the scenes by the league. They're dealing with, you know, a really, really litigious owner who can get very ugly very quickly. You're talking about other owners who don't necessarily want their private business washed out in public. You know, I think there's so many different cross dynamics going on with the Washington Football Club that it's difficult to know who's behind these emails, first of all. It appears it's not the league. But we don't know exactly who it is. We don't know what their motive was. That's a real mystery wrapped in an enigma. But I do think that the central point is that I think the league underneath it all would love nothing better than to divest itself of Dan Snyder.
Do you have a theory on the leak? You say the NFL, you're believing the NFL when they say, because I was looking for motive on who's leaking that, and I thought it's they want to get Gruden out of there before that gets any worse than it already is, because they've got already got people resigning in their front office months ago.
I mean, there's 4 or 5 possibilities for the source of those emails. I don't necessarily believe the NFL did it, because look at the mountain of trouble it's causing the league. The league really wanted the Washington football investigation to go away quietly now. You know, they wanted a season in Washington that was more positive than the seasons of the past. So I'm inclined to think it wasn't the league. I might be naive in that. I really don't have any special insight there. I just know the dynamics, again, are very complicated and changing.
You mentioned there are 4 or 5 possibilities. What are they? Who are they?
I mean, I suppose one could be someone discontented within Beth Wilkinson's investigation, someone discontented who was privy to some of the report from the NFLPA, which now is petitioning for the release of all the emails. One potentiality is someone from the league. One potentiality is someone from the Washington Football Club that wanted revenge on Bruce Allen and John Gruden got caught in the crosshairs, or wanted revenge for some reason on John Gruden and Bruce Allen got caught in the crosshairs. You know, there's at least 4, and there's probably others that are potential leakers as well. And I'm not when I say their names, I'm not saying there's a stronger possibility of one than the other. I'm just saying I think there's at least, to me, 4 to 5 places this could be coming from.
How do you arrive in a place, Sally, where this is being done so freely and no one is saying anything about it?
You know, the league's behavior here all along has been so buttoned up. And I think it's because the ugliness with Dan Snyder, the ugly that he can get to very quickly, as you've seen in his suits with his partners and investors, got so ugly so quickly. I think the league knows who it's dealing with. And so it's really trying to keep it all tamped very down. You know, I think that's the main thing. And that's why I'm not necessarily convinced these came from the league.
Can you explain to us where Daniel Snyder resides right now, what the purgatory is? Because he's not in charge, but he kind of is in charge. It's just an agreement where, okay, we're going to put this off to the side. Explain it to me, because I don't know. Daniel Snyder still owns the team and probably still has the power, even though publicly he said to not have the power, correct?
So, you know, I can only go on my impression. I've only been out there once so far this season. My impression is the league is almost running the team. I don't think Dan Snyder is running the team really on a day-to-day basis. I think the team is almost sort of on automatic pilot a little bit. They're being well run interiorly, at least from my standpoint. The Rivera regime is more organized than other, you know, other clubhouses have been, and they're a little more forthcoming than teams have been in the past. But my impression is that Dan Snyder is sort of sitting somewhere off to the side, waiting for the clock to tick when he can come back in and get his paws back on things again. I don't see evidence that he's directly manipulating things right now.
Sally, you come from a family of journalists. So what, and you come from traditional journalism. Your father took it very seriously, even though he wrote funny, and you take it just as seriously. When I tell you that the league wants Snyder out, you work at the Washington Post. Bezos owns the Washington Post. Bezos wants the Washington football team. Where do your journalistic conflicts reside in all of that?
Oh, I mean, look, I stay away from all of them in the sense of, you know, I don't know Jeff Bezos. I don't really know Dan Snyder. I think I haven't talked to Dan Snyder directly in, I don't know, 2-3 years. My interactions with him have not been, I've not found him completely on the level or candid. I can't say the same about Jeff Bezos because I don't really have interactions with him. You know, and I don't know for a fact that Bezos does want the Washington Football Club. That's not anything that I've particularly heard in my circles. So that's where I would start. That's sort of kind of, I mean, I think, look, the, regardless though of the situation, you report without fear or favor, you know. You simply report what's what, and you try to sort out who's on the level and go with that.
And that brings us to Adam Schefter, because you report without fear or favor. Obviously, sending an email to a team executive that calls him Mr. Editor, that's favor, and allowing him to edit it, that's favor. And but I was just saying before you came on here that ESPN also has some conflicts with its business partners, and insiders are journalists, but they're journalists not at the objective rate where you're trying to do journalism.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the way I was taught in the business, if you feel conflicted, that's a conflict. You know, if you're trying to define what a conflict is, it's if you feel conflicted in your duties. You know, if you're inclined to pull a punch. And so, you know, that's where I would start broadly. And then more specifically, you know, Adam Schefter's a great reporter. He gets a lot of stuff. He really does. And his sources have a lot of trust in him. And it's a very fine line that he walks there. I can understand the impulse to let someone like Bruce Allen, who's in a position to have information, look over something you're writing for the sake of accuracy, but to let him edit it necessarily, or to show him the whole thing. That's something I would not have done, to just turn over an entire piece to somebody. I don't think that is really what my bosses would expect of me. And so I would not do it. But I think all of us have certainly shown wording to other people to make sure that we're right, you know, that we're accurate, that we're not warping something or overstating something.
I find interesting the changes in journalism, Sally, because I think the toothpaste is out of the tube on this one. There are very few people doing it now your way, at very few newspapers in the world taking it with that kind of integrity. It's shifted so much toward entertainment. The work that you're doing is great, but it's different than what we're talking about here. Your standard, you're holding on to a standard that that it feels like America has rejected.
Well, you know, I have to say this about Adam Schefter. If you look at the bulk of his work, is he offering up information that is accurate and helpful and informative to the reader? And I think the overall question to that is yes. I think you learn a lot from Adam Schefter, and you learn a lot that's interesting from Adam Schefter. So, you know, what his personal methods are in going about that, you know, I don't know. I know his information is almost invariably solid, and how he's cultivating his relationships, that's between him and the people he works with. I know he's very respected by a lot of people inside football, which is how he gets his information. Look, you know, one of the things about covering the NFL is, or any beat really, is you talk to a lot of people off the record, and their names and their direct quotes never wind up in the paper or in the piece that you're doing. A lot of times you're just informed by people who never really appear. And you do that because you want to make sure you're correct. And so again, we've seen lots of journalism sins, and I've committed a couple of them myself. I don't view Adam Schefter's, this thing with Adam Schefter today, I don't view that as like some grand transgression the way others do. I think the bulk of his career, the bulk of his work is pretty excellent.
For those people who don't do paywalls, because I saw this, a lot of people wanted that Athletic story on Kyrie that Shams did that had a lot of information in it, but people weren't willing to go over the paywall. What did you write about today, Sally? Because the Gruden thing moved you to write. What was the angle that you chose to take?
Well, I was really struck by how incubated in traditional establishment football circles Gruden always was. You know, he's born in Sandusky, you know, home of Newt Rockne. He was reared at Notre Dame, where his dad was an assistant coach to Dan Devine. You know, as a young assistant, he's with the two most iconic coaching tree franchises there are, the San Francisco 49ers and the Green Bay Packers. And it's hard to name two coaching trees that spread more men around the league, right? And so I just was looking at just how he was kind of seated and grown inside the game. He's the ultimate insider. And the idea that Gruden's conduct would come as a surprise to anyone inside the NFL and be appalling to them suddenly now after all these years is absurd. They've known for a long time exactly how he conducted himself around these subjects.
Sally, I just want to clarify this, because it seems like you're saying it was well known what Bruce Allen and John Gruden were like, how they've acted. We've known them their whole lives. And if so, why weren't people digging into what it is they were doing as they were doing it? Why did we wait so long on them?
Because they were all participating in it. You know, the people that he corresponded with, you know, I think that there's a real fear out there about what who else he's corresponded with in those 650,000 emails. You know, Bruce Allen's communications with people, John Gruden's communications with people. My point is, I think a lot of men in the league have talked this way and have held these attitudes for a long, long time. And people just didn't really admit it openly. But behind the doors of taverns and stuff, I think that's how they have interacted with each other. I think there's exceptions like Bruce Arians. I think there's some great exceptions. I don't think like a Bruce Arians would necessarily, I mean, like, first of all, who uses the word queers these days that way anyway, right? I mean, that is such a meathead frat boy way to talk. It's archaic by any standard, and it's an earmark of a certain attitude. But unfortunately, I think it's an earmark of a certain old school attitude that's still very much alive inside the NFL. And I think it's exactly why you don't see more promotions of black coaches and more black coaches hired as head coaches. You know, bingo, there it is. It's right there.
Is it fair to say, Sally, because you like overarching themes and you know how America is represented by sports and how our sports represent America, is it fair to take one guy, and I see the pipeline, the roots that you're making. This guy was born and bred in football, grew through football to the atrophied state that he was in, and still refers to people as queers because the football pipelined him, formed him, shaped him. And so you're saying this is unsurprising. Of course, this is the jewel that would belch out. Is it fair to do that based on one man's scandal?
You know, probably not. You know, life isn't fair, though, right? That's what football teaches. You know, you hitch up your britches and you deal with that. Life's not fair. You know, look, should he become the poster boy for this? You know, alone? Probably not. He got caught in something for some reason that we're still trying to divine here. You know, why was he a target of this? You know, it's possible that his attitudes on this really are worse than other people's in the league, but I don't think that, you know. I mean, what do you guys think? I mean, why Gruden, right?
Oh, I just think that just like sports ends up representing everything that happens in America, of course the starting place on this is them looking under the carpets in Washington and finding the hashtag MeToo stuff that they had to react to poorly and late because they didn't know how to react to it. The league's not equipped for any of this stuff. And so now America's making its way into these playpens and everyone is running scattershot scared because God knows how behind all these people were, Sally. God knows what secrets they're... I mean, 650,000 emails, he can't be the only one out here disparaging Michael Sam, right? Like... I don't know what's coming next, but it seems like we're going to see the underbelly of this thing and that Gruden's just the first casualty. Do you think I'm wrong on that?
I think it's possible that we see more out of this, but I think someone wrote yesterday that the NFL is trying to treat this like radioactive waste and sort of bury it underground under, you know, thousands of pounds of concrete. It's really hard to say which way this thing turns now. But, you know, I do think that the league has a larger reckoning than just with John Gruden. I think you're correct about that. You know, I think that there may be some other coaches or executives that that find themselves caught up in this thing and get their sleeve caught in the meat grinder.
Sally, thank you for being on with us. Always good catching up with you.
Sure. My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Sal.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.